From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour, and we appreciate being joined by Sister Maria Campos of the Great Vocations Office here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Sister, good day to you.
Good day. How are you?
You know, a sister's office is just down the hall. We could almost not violate anything, and we could just yell at each other.
Yes, we're more than 6 feet apart.
Use, tin cans and a piece of string.
Yep.
Yeah. Like our parents claimed they did in the old days. Yeah.
That's right.
That's right. Yeah. So how are things in the vocations office?
Well, things are going great. Actually, we're very busy with all our retreats and giving vocation talks through Zoom and meeting with different groups.
How has the pandemic, and now we're into the second year of this pandemic.
I know.
How has that affected the work of the vocations department?
Well, it was new learning for all of us, but it's been great because now we're a little bit more savvy when it comes to doing Zoom meetings and different types of meetings over the Internet. So we've learned an awful lot, and we've learned that we can still do activities, even though it might be a little different than in person, and feel a little different since we're not able to really be present to each other alive, you know, next to each other. But on Zoom, it helps us to feel like we're still connected in some way.
So ultimately, it seems like, especially with vocations, face-to-face becomes so important at some point in the process.
Yes, it does. But because of the pandemic, I guess for right now, Zoom has been a lifesaver.
Yes, indeed. Well, I mean, what would you have done 10 years ago?
Probably just speak over the phone and wait till we could meet face to face.
That would be that would be great. You know, it's too bad we can't do that today, but I think today is coming. So you have some workshops coming up?
Yes, we have Jesuicat, which is for the girls from ages 13 to 17, and that's going to happen on May 1st. So we ask everyone, if you're interested, to please register by April 15th. The cost is $15. It will be a discernment retreat for girls to learn a little bit about married life and religious life, and a little bit about prayer life. And we will have games. We will still have games, believe it or not, on our meeting, and icebreakers and our talks, and we should have a great day. It'll only be a couple hours, and then we'll come back together in the evening for Mass. So it should be a good day and a fun day as well.
Very good. And the Mass will be online as well?
It'll be live streamed, yes, for the whole family.
Right.
And it'll be the Sunday Mass at 4:30.
Oh, very good. Very good. So primarily what, just teenagers, like 9th through 12th grade, something like that?
Yeah, ages 13 through 17.
And what's the mission of there? What's the goal there for these young girls?
Well, the goal is for them to really recognize, how is God calling them? Is God calling them to be single life, married life, to a religious vocation, possibly serving God in the church?
Mm-hmm.
Just to be open. It doesn't, you know, if you're 13, it's not going to happen like, you know, by getting hit on the head, but it's something that at least you hear. And your heart is open, and you pray with that throughout the years that you have in high school, or you know, maybe a couple of years in college, and see, where is God really leading me, and where is my life going to be the happiest?
And to really put, I think, to put God at the center of your life, whether you want to be a professional basketball player or want to enter the religious life or the married life, this is you know, something you should pray about and put God at the center of it.
Right. Yes.
And you know, speaking of basketball, I know we have the seminarians priest basketball game. When are we going to start including sisters in that game?
That's a good question.
You don't have an answer yet. That would be even more, it's already a very fun game, even more fun game, I'm sure. Have decisions been made about things like that? I believe there's a hope that the vocations dinner, the annual dinner, will actually maybe be in person this summer.
Yes, we're hoping that will be, if COVID continues to go the way it's going now, and we don't have any more pandemic, hopefully that we can have the vocation dinner.
Boy, that would be that's always, I managed to make most of those, and it is, that's just a great evening. People might not believe this, but on top of everything, it's really fun too.
It is.
You know, it's inspiring to see these young men and hear sometimes from their parents or siblings, but just to see them, and then some of them have a great sense of humor too. I wish more people. It's always well attended, but I wish more people knew about it and came, because whether they had a sibling or a child, a young man in that group, it's really a faith-filled evening that's very enjoyable.
Yes, it is. I enjoy it.
And they moved around. They moved around the diocese.
They do. This year, I think it's going to be at St. Mary's.
In Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, very good. Very good.
Yes.
Yeah. I remember one in Placerville, one in Vallejo, one at Our Lady of Grace in West Sacramento, at the school, actually. And it's just been a delight for sure.
Yes.
I've always felt, sister, that you were a walking billboard for vocations, because you are so full of faith and so full of joy.
Thank you.
This is obviously a vocation that fits you. Tell us a little bit about your vocation.
Well, I guess my vocation started young. I saw this sister who was dressed in her habit, and I felt like at that time the Lord said, this is what you're going to do.
Wow.
And when I tried to tell my mother about it, I was just young, about maybe 5 or 6 years old. She would not have it. She didn't want to listen to me. And she said, she tried to tell me that they would send me so far away that I'd never see the family again.
Oh, wow.
Trying to scare me, you know. But somehow in my heart, I just kept it to myself. And it's not to say that I didn't date, that I didn't enjoy high school, that I wasn't a tomboy in a way, to roughhouse with my brother and do all kinds of things, because I was really into sports and music. And I thought that someday I would also like to be a musician, and I did have scholarships in college. But in the end, I knew deep in my heart that God was calling me, and I chose religious life.
Wow. So you grew up here in Sacramento, is that right?
In Sacramento, yes.
Yeah, and where did you go to high school?
I actually went to public school. I went to Grant Union High School.
Oh, the famous Pacers.
Yes.
And you better be an athlete at that school.
Yes.
They've great history in that high school. Just
yes, there is.
So did you live in the, I mean, there's mostly by district. You lived in the Grant Union district.
Yes, I did.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Wow. Boy, that's a... So many accomplished people have come out of Grant and gone on to do great things, and did great things at Grant as well. And some of their coaches have been coaching forever, I think.
They have.
Yeah,
they've had great coaches throughout the years.
Yeah, yeah. It's a part of the legend of Sacramento is Grant High School. That's for sure. And then where'd you go to college?
I actually went to Sacramento State my first 2 years before entering religious life, and then I went partly to USF.
Okay. So during the middle of your college career, you decided it was time.
Yes, during my sophomore year, when I actually applied, and Father Dan Madigan was the one who actually inspired me to join the Sisters of Mercy.
Well, that will seal the deal when he doesn't it?
Yes. So he had Sister Eucharista Marie, who was a Blessed Sacrament sister, they're no longer in the diocese, take me up to meet the Sisters of Mercy. And it was interesting because once I got there, I knew in my heart that that is where the Lord was calling me to. I just felt perfectly at home and spent the rest of my life once I entered there.
Wow,
my dad expected me home in 2 weeks because I was always so kind of outgoing and into sports and into everything that he didn't think I could stay quiet.
Well, the Sisters of Mercy have such a long history in this diocese, of course. And,
yes.
For a while there, I thought you had to be Irish to be in the Sisters of Mercy. So talk about, you know, the various, you know, there's so many congregations with a vocation.
Yes.
Why the Sisters of Mercy, and explain some of the other options there would be for people who want to enter the religious life, for women.
Well, yes, I think you have to see what makes you the happiest, what type of service do you want to do once you've decided that religious life is for you, and to really investigate what is their charism, what population do they serve, because every congregation was founded to serve a certain population and in a certain way. So like, for example, we have the Kenosians here in Sacramento, and their work is mainly catechetics and teaching, and our charism is to really serve the poor, the sick, and the uneducated.
Mm-hmm.
And so while at the beginning, our options, you know, as history went on, we were nursing, or we were teaching, or we were working in the poor districts. But as time, history goes on, sometimes the mission, you're still serving the poor, the sick, and the educated, but you're doing it in different ways. So now we have sisters who are doctors, who are lawyers, who are all kinds of backgrounds that actually go out and still serve the poor, the sick, and the uneducated. So we look to see, you know, where is the need most for the sisters to work in. For the Kenosians, they continue to do their mission also with the poor, and they still continue to do catechetics, and they work in some of the schools. And then you have the charities who have a totally different mission, you know, and they work with the poorest of the poor, and we have them in Sacramento. We have some other orders here in Sacramento, some like the Dominicans who do education. They work at St. Mary's. And then there are other orders like outside of Sacramento, like there's a Carmelite group that's active working at St. Patrick's, and they actually do a lot of retreat and healing work. And then you have the charity sisters who work mostly teaching. These are different charities. They wear a blue habit, and they work with teaching and hospital work. So that really there's all kinds of organizations. The Blessed Sacrament sisters, whom I knew, work with the different indigenous tribes throughout the United States. So they worked actually on their land wherever their tribes were.
Wow.
Yeah.
So in the Sisters of Mercy, correct me if I'm wrong, founded in Ireland?
Yes, we were founded in Ireland, in Dublin, in 1831.
And who was behind that?
A sister, Catherine McCauley was our founder. Mm-hmm. But, you know, at the time, she was the head there in Dublin, Ireland, to start the foundations, and then she would always send a professed sister and two junior professed and a novice to start new foundations. So we claim Mother Baptist Russell here in Sacramento, and I think her statue is at the Capitol on the ground.
Right.
To commemorate all the work that the Sisters of Mercy have done here in Sacramento.
And you came to Sacramento, I believe, 1857, something like that?
Yes, something like that, from San Francisco.
Right.
That was the first foundation. And then 5 years after they started the mission there, they sent again a professed and two juniors and a novice to Sacramento to begin our foundation here.
So how do you found, do you have to go to Rome and say, hey, this is what I want to do?
Well, I guess there's all kinds of paperwork, and I guess you have to be invited by the diocese, really, you know, mm-hmm. and the need. And at the time, they had no sisters here in the Sacramento area, and they heard about the Sisters of Mercy. And, of course, we've always had Irish priests here, too.
Right.
So that's how they knew about us, and they invited us to come. So that's how Mother Baptist Russell ended up coming to California, through invitation. And then once the priest has invited us, I guess they do some of the paperwork, and we do some of the paperwork, and we have to find a place where we're going to build our mother house and begin our works. So, yeah, our mother house was originally in Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
But since we've now become United States-wide, our headquarters now is in Silver Springs.
Oh, wow. Maryland.
Maryland. So we're considered one large community, 3,000 of us.
I think if I were in charge, my headquarters would be in Maui or somewhere.
Not in the snowy place.
No. Or maybe Palm Springs or yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. So what are your greatest joys being a sister?
My greatest joy is just being able to share the Lord with everyone I meet. Hopefully I've embodied some of his characteristics of joyfulness, and I just really love working with people. Besides working here with the seminarians and their formator, I work with Father Memo also in promoting vocations. I also work helping the Bishop Gallegos Maternity Home for mm-hmm. Homeless women. And I also try to help some of our other organizations. I do some spiritual direction for women as well. I did the 19th annotation of St. Ignatius. So give talks on St. Ignatius. There's a lot involved, not just one. It's not like a household where your father or mother go to work, come home, and do whatever needs to be done at home. Our work continues throughout the day, and we'd love to spread the gospel message as much as we can in different ways.
I remember when a group of sisters, and I can't remember which group, were on Oprah
mm-hmm.
and just completely charmed her. It was like she had all these questions she wanted to ask, and before the show was over, I thought she was going to join them.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've really enjoyed, my first few assignments for the first maybe 25 years of my life, I worked in high school.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of my ministries. And I still keep in contact with many of my students through Facebook or whatever, you know, they meet me to continue to be in touch with them. And it's just a joy to see them and to see their children and how their life has turned out. And you know, at the time, you wonder if they ever would remember you. And so many of them are all appreciative for the background and the teaching that we did for them, you know?
Yeah. So when you meet with possible candidates or just young women at Deus Volcat or other places, what are the toughest questions they ask you?
Oh, toughest questions. There's so many, I guess. I really can't think of one particular question. They want to know how God speaks to them, I think, is the hardest part to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say you need to listen with your heart, because your heart becomes your third eye and your third ear. And, you know, this takes place in the silence, you know, to just be and not be totally involved in your iPhone or your,
yeah.
your iPad or television. You just have to take time and listen and ponder, what is God saying to my heart? And, you know, the only thing the Lord asks of any of us is to truly be happy in our lives, whatever we choose to do.
Mm-hmm.
So that is another piece of advice I would give.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that people might not understand that, but if you are truly happy, you're most likely doing the Lord's work.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, there are all these distractions that you may think make you happy, and they're all empty promises.
Right. Yes, that is right.
And it's been inspirational to me in the years of doing the Bishop's Hour to talk to our religious, to talk to our priests, to talk to our deacons, to talk to seminarians, to talk to people who are considering it, and just see how joyful they are. I never met one who said, "Yeah, I kind of regret it, but that's what I'm doing." So I've never heard that, and I've never sensed it either.
Yeah, and it's not to say that once you enter, everything is flowery.
Right.
Because it's like a marriage, you know. There's always going to be some stumbling blocks, and there's going to be testing by the Lord. Is this truly, your vocation? But if it is, all things, you're patient, and all will be well in the Lord, It will survive whatever, you're going through. So
He'll never give you more than you can handle.
Right.
So what's involved? Like, okay, you're 2 years through Sac State, and then you make the decision. What's involved from that step on?
At the time when I entered, and still today, they have what they call the candidacy program.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a 2-year program where you're living with the sisters. And in some places, it's 1 year. For us, it's 2 years. Then after that, you become a novice. The novitiate is 2 years, and then you become professed. That's when you take your first vows, and they're called temporary vows. And temporary vows you can take and renew up to 12 years.
Wow.
So, it's a long process. So that when you finally say, and during those 12 years, I made my final vows after 5 years because I knew that was in my heart. So you have a time period, to discern. If you've gone the 12 years and you're still not clear, then probably taking a little leave for a while and making a decision. But usually within that period of time, you know whether you're ready or not and how much you have to renew your vows. And I think, you have to listen to what's around you, what people say to you, to really discern that what God is saying to you, whether to you're ready or not.
And if you decide this isn't the course, it's not failure. It's just
it's not.
They certainly don't want you to feel I've put in this much time, or
Right.
They want you to truly discern.
It's like any schooling you might have taken. Suppose you went on to be an engineer and decide you're not really happy there, that you were really called to be a doctor.
You know?
So you switch your way of being. But no, that was one thing that Father Dan Madigan always said to me. He said, Maria, if you're not happy, do not be afraid to leave,
Right.
And it's not a shame, and it's not anything that you have to worry about what people will think. At least you tried. You were courageous enough to try.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice, and it sort of takes the pressure off.
Yes, it does.
It's like you do what's in your heart and pray on it, and if this is the course, God will lead you that way.
Yeah, that is right.
So tell us once more about Deus Vocat, the details for people to sign up.
Okay. It's going to be held on May 1st. It will be through Zoom, and it will be 2 hours from 10 to noon with a Mass at 4:30 live stream for the family. The cost is $15, and they ask you to register by April 15th. And you can download the forms from www.scd.org/Deus Vocat. And if you have any questions, you can call or email Maricela Smith. And you can look it up on the web, or the number for her office is 916-733-0258.
Very good. Sister, always a joy to talk with you. Hopefully one day soon it'll be in person.
Yes, I hope so. It looks like it'll be soon.
I hope so, too.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
God bless.
God bless you, too. Thanks, sister. And God bless you, too. That's Sister Maria Campos, and she's in the vocations office here at the Diocese of Sacramento. And I love it when you conclude a conversation and someone says, God bless you. I just think that's wonderful stuff. We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. Bishop Soto has issued new guidelines for singing and music at liturgies during the COVID-19 pandemic. The new guidelines on singing, which for this document includes chanting and playing music liturgies, replaces the older pandemic guidelines and directives. The singing and playing wind instruments are permitted, subject to the restrictions based on the county risk level, purple, red, orange, or yellow. And it, many counties we've seen have moved from purple to red. And that's down. I confuse sometimes. Red always sounds like that should be the high category. But during the pandemic, purple was the top one, and then red, orange, and yellow. And whether the liturgy is indoors or out, for outdoor liturgies, in all tiers, musicians who are singing or playing a wind instrument must maintain 6 feet of physical distance from non-musicians and other musicians if they're wearing face coverings, or 12 feet of physical distance if they're not wearing face coverings. For indoor liturgies, the musician singing or playing a wind instrument must wear face coverings at all times. For outdoor liturgies, the assembly may sing or chant as long as they wear face coverings and maintain physical distances. Indoors, still, the assembly may not sing. Musicians must maintain, this is indoors, maintain at least 12 feet of physical distance from other musicians, 24 feet of physical distance from the assembly, and musician in that would be in purple. Also, during a liturgy, no more than 10 musicians may sing or play wind instruments. And then in the red, orange, or yellow, red being substantial, orange moderate, yellow minimal, and purple is widespread, of course. In the red, orange, or yellow, the musicians must maintain physical distancing from the assembly and other musicians. These are the new guidelines for the pandemic, our ongoing pandemic, hopefully seemingly lessening greatly, and partly perhaps because of increased vaccinations, a tremendous amount of people getting vaccinated now, and the bishops, of course, of California, Bishop Soto in particular, and the bishops of the United States all urge us to get vaccinated, that this is a responsible thing to do. Bishop Soto goes on to say, when possible, musicians are encouraged to have individual microphones. Microphones should be sanitized after use. The number of people setting up and breaking down equipment should be minimized. Care should be taken to ensure musicians are able to receive communion during the liturgy. As before, the presider may participate in song only while in the sanctuary. Also, per the guidelines for the resumption of public masses in the Diocese of Sacramento, the cantor still remains at their place rather than using the ambo. And those are available on the diocesan website as we move on through the pandemic. You know, we had a chance the other day to sit down with one of the great Catholics in the Diocese of Sacramento, a lot of great Catholics in the Diocese of Sacramento, but sort of a public face, a very public face in Sacramento, and a man who gives a lot of his time to the church, emceeing events, things like that, Walt Gray. Television personality, an anchor, very, very well respected. Somebody I used to cover college football games with, and just he's a great human being, a great family man, great Catholic. And we're going to bring you that interview now.
How you doing, buddy?
That's double jeopardy.
We're always in double jeopardy, aren't we?
Boy, are we. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Walt Gray joins us, ABC 10 anchor, very familiar face and voice here in throughout Sacramento, MC, dad of the year, husband of the year. You got it all going for you, Walt.
You're gonna get some pushback on that last one, but you know, I'll take it.
well, and we should point out that we're because of COVID, we're not even talking on the phone. We're talking with tin cans and a piece of string.
Yeah, my phone's not very good. I was with talking to your producer Gabe, and I was trying every cell phone that I have in the house, and it's dropping here and dropping there, and I'm like,
It's totally my fault. Like, everything that happens within this house is my fault anyway, so I'll just take this one, too.
I know that. We have kids similar age. I have four teenagers, it's... And if my phone doesn't work, then I ask them to fix it, you know, because I don't know how to fix it. Yeah.
Well, it's funny. My oldest daughter, who's now away her freshman year at Marquette University
in
Milwaukee. Yeah, so when my wife and I would have any issues internet-wise or computer-wise, we just call Abby. And Abby would come down, and she would fix it because, kids today... You know, they just know stuff.
They're born with it.
They just know stuff that we don't. So, you know.
And I've had the pleasure of having dinner with you and Abby a few times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We've done the St. Vincent de Paul dinner every year. It's going to be a little different this year. But every year I take one of the kids because it's a pretty big event.
It is.
You're at the table. The bishop's at the table. We usually have a couple of other, high rollers, say that, but very prominent Catholics at the table, let's just say it that way. And so it's one of the most enjoyable things that I do, Bob, with the diocese, for the diocese. It's actually one of the rare things that I actually look forward to.
Yeah.
As you know, in the business you do many things. Some of them are out of obligation, which is fine. Some of them, you get through. This is something that, to me, has always been very enjoyable. Just the people, the speakers, everything. It's a great night.
It is a great night, and obviously you do a great job, and people are you take an event that's a 9 and turn it into a 12. I'll tell you. And
well, thank you. It's very. You're too kind. It's I don't have a ton to do with the night other than, not make too big of a mess of it, just move it along. But, the only thing through the years I think that I've had input in is who's ever organizing and donating their time is to make sure that the guest speaker doesn't go too long.
Yes.
Because that's, as you know, that has happened upon occasion.
It does happen.
With any event we go to. And I may, if I know the guest speaker, I may work out one of those baseball third base coach hand signal thing to them where, if I start tugging on my ear, I'm not scratching it. That means you need to wrap it. So, we all have things like that as part of the MC business, but I really enjoy that night. So,
I
hope to do it next year.
It's interesting because I've accused Paul Starkey, who is one of the people that helps put together that it kind of has a Notre Dame bent to it.
Yeah.
Sometimes we have guests. Of course, your wife's a Notre Dame alum, is that right?
She grew up in South Bend. Which is the funny thing to bring that up. So, born and raised in South Bend, and when her choice for college came around, the only place she didn't want to go was Notre Dame because that's the local school.
Sure.
And kids in high school, it's like, they don't want to go to the local school, no matter how good it is, but she really had no idea how good Notre Dame was academically and all that until she went to University of Florida, but she had no idea. And so her dad went to Notre Dame Law. Her brother graduated with a MBA Notre Dame Business. And so they're huge Notre Dame people. And that was one of the great things when I first met my wife and then we later married is that we were fortunate to go back there every year for the big opening game tailgate. So all of that stuff that I grew up watching, on Saturday morning or Sunday morning TV with Lindsey Nelson. All those, the Notre Dame replays with the famous line of let's move to further action in the fourth quarter.
Exactly.
All of that. I finally, the band marching through campus, on the way to the game, I'm like, wow, this stuff's for real.
And the Grotto.
It still is. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. So yeah.
Wow,
daughter's at Marquette. My daughter's now at Marquette getting the Catholic college experience and she's really enjoying it and even braving the weather too. So it's working out pretty well.
Do they have a shrine there to El Maguire?
No, they don't have a shrine. They do have a very, very cool grotto, which is kind of like Notre Dame in the center of campus and a very historic small chapel that's in the center of campus. If anybody's ever been to Marquette, it's a And this what, Bob, I was there in October, and what amazed me was what a great town Milwaukee is.
Oh,
I had
yeah.
no knowledge of Milwaukee, and I went there, and I'm like, this is like a mini Chicago without all of the stuff.
Yeah.
So, and I happened to be there in mid-October, and it was perfect weather. The next weekend, when I wasn't there, is when the snow started.
It hit.
So I was out of there. I got out while the getting was good, and it's been cold there ever since. So.
Well, that's a great. I know that wanting to get out of town, though. We have a high school senior, and she has applied to every school in America except UC Davis.
Well, you know, I tried to sell my daughter Abby on Davis. I said, it's a great school, and it's close to home, yet when you're in Davis, as you know, it's the People's Republic of
right.
Davis.
Yeah.
You might as well be 100 miles from here.
Right.
And but she wanted to go do her thing. And, you know, Davis would have been extremely happy with Davis or Cal.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
She wanted to get on with getting on. And, you know, I understand all that. So,
well, that's
know, we'll
a great choice.
That's, yeah.
Marquette's a great choice.
Yeah. Yeah. We're happy with it. And, she's doing well. She got some, academic grants and scholarships to try to get that tuition down because those schools are,
oh yeah,
they're not community college prices,
yes.
as you know. So, where's Maeve going? Where's your daughter Maeve looking at?
Well, this is the next daughter. Maeve actually,
oh, okay.
You got the names right. Maeve is, and she's the one that always comes to me to St. Vincent de Paul. She is going to UC Davis. It's the next one, Emmy.
Oh, good.
And she's looking at
good.
One of the Catholic schools. She got in the University of Portland, but it's the same thing. Wow, the tuition.
Yeah.
But they did. So they offered her a great ride, and then she's. You know, Cal, Stanford,
wow.
You know, most of the UCs except UC Davis and NYU, Notre Dame, you know, the usual, a few of
sure.
the Catholic schools mixed in and then a lot of the UCs.
Yeah.
And she actually got an interview with Stanford. So, but that's like a one in a million shot, you know.
Yeah, well. That's the reason why you and I are both be working till we're 80.
Oh, easy.
Because
yeah.
we've got younger children who want to go to non-affordable schools. So that's the price we pay for having young children. So
we knew
we're going to pay for it somehow.
Yeah, I mean, she got a letter from University of Portland. Congratulations, on and on and on and on and on. You know.
Yeah.
And they offered her like. Over 4 years, like $100,000. I said, oh, well, this is great. You know, you tell them you want to check right now. And then we checked mm-hmm. the tuition and added all up. And I was going, it still wasn't enough.
No.
You know.
What's weird about it is a lot of these schools are around 65.
Yeah, just for tuition.
Year.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, how do we work this down? How do we make it work?
Right.
And, you know, just to circle back, the whole Catholic University experience she's just really, really enjoyed it. And she didn't go there for that. I mean, you know, we go to Sunday church, you know, at Holy Spirit.
Right.
And so, but it's not, you know, it wasn't her thing to say, oh, there are some other schools here, but I definitely want to go to a Catholic
right.
school. It just happened that it worked out. And, you know, that it's gravy. It really has been a good experience.
That's great. Well, the editor of the Sacramento Catholic Herald, Julie Sly, is a Marquette graduate.
Good. Good to know that. I think we knew that, and I remember Monica mentioning that that either her or there were some other people locally who had gone to Marquette.
Steve Avella is who is a historian, a great Sacramento historian, wrote a great book about the diocese, about the McClatchys, and he's a professor of history at Marquette. But he's a local Sacramentan as well. So, in fact,
good.
He gave the homily at Bishop Quinn's funeral.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm duly noting all these names in case she needs bail money.
Yes,
and
right.
So
right.
I've got a short list going here.
Oh, man.
Oh, God forgive me, you know, but it's true. Hey, you never know these days. You just want them to be safe and enjoyable. And if they're anything like me, my kids, then they're in deep, deep trouble because I'm surprised I'm still standing after what I did. So that's a story for another Catholic show.
Well, it's a story for the confessional, and good. Thank God there's a seal of confession.
It's, you know, the last time I was in confession, the priest walked out, and he's like, "I've never heard stuff like that." So I thought perhaps I had confessed too much.
So,
Bishop Soto, if you're hearing this, I'm just kidding.
Yes, yes. We are with Walt Gray from the anchor for ABC 10. Walt, how long have you been in Sacramento media?
I got here in March of 1988 and was working at KCRA, the NBC station,
right.
And did sports there for the first 5.5 years and got to spend 2 or 3 beautiful autumn football seasons with you at my side calling.
Yes.
Aggie football games
that
on
was
KCRA. And,
so much fun.
That was a lot of fun. That's when local stations did a lot of that. And I'm glad that, you know, that was a magic time to – we got to travel
yeah.
a little bit, you know, where we had games at Santa Clara. They had a team.
ULP.
San Francisco State had
yeah.
a team.
Yeah.
You know, St. Mary's had a team.
Right.
Sonoma State had a team. Chico had a team.
Yeah.
So those
Chico,
were
all
the
of
regional
them.
Games that we did. Yeah, those are the regional games that we did, and I really missed that part of it.
Oh.
And but, you know, the fact that I had a chance to do it, it's like, okay, you're not going to do it every year forever. So the fact that, you know, I got many years out of that, I look back and just go, that was awesome. That was just a great
yeah,
time.
Yeah, I
really appreciated that.
Such great memories of it. And, you know, it's like we were doing 7 games a year. Yeah, I remember one year. I think we did a double header. We I think we did Santa Clara in the afternoon and went over and did UOP and Sac State or somebody. You know, it was just
UOP had a team.
UOP had a team.
There's another one. UOP had a team.
Yeah.
Yes, we did 3 Aggie games. We did 3 Sac State games, and then we did the Causeway.
Right. Right.
So it was a total of 7 in all, which is a that's a busy schedule, local schedule.
That's huge.
But it was fun. I mean, you know, that was the early 90s for the two of us. And, you know, I don't have any regrets about, you know, moving out of sports and into news. News has been very enjoyable, too. So, you know, I've just been blessed. I think somebody said the other day to me that, like, if somebody would pass you a magic wand, what would you wish for? And I'd say, you know what? I give it to somebody else. I'm good.
Oh,
you know,
that's well put.
I don't want to be greedy. I think I've been very fortunate, and there's other people that need that magic wand. So, you know, thank you.
Yeah, no, I tell people it beats working for a living. You know,
yeah.
If
you have a job, no matter what you do, and you enjoy it, it really isn't a task.
Yeah.
It's something that you look forward to and you enjoy, and it makes an 8-hour day go by in 4 hours, seemingly. You know, it just makes a big difference. And, you know, I've never really had a bad experience or a bad day. You know, today I sent a couple of emails to the bosses that I probably would like to take back. But, you know, tomorrow's another day.
We really need an unsend button on the computer.
Gosh, yeah, today, to be honest, I could have used that. So, but it wasn't as bad as it could have been. But who knows, when I go in tomorrow, maybe I'm kidding myself. We'll see.
We retape the interview. Former.
Yes. Who's now living in Wairika.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows, but I've had fun, and it's been a good experience, and we're trying to keep up, you know, getting back into the church swing of things on Sunday and trying to watch it on, you know, the YouTube rebroadcast.
Yeah.
It was Christmas was, you know, it was different watching a mass, on TV, on YouTube. And it was just a whole different thing, but, you know, there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and it's coming quickly. And it's, you know, the light is not an oncoming train, fortunately, which is good.
That's right. You know, I heard something the other day that I never thought I'd hear as we were sitting in the living room watching Mass from St. James in Davis on TV. And
mm-hmm.
our 16-year-old son at the end of Mass, he says, "I miss going to Mass." I was like,
"What?
What?
Really?
Really? Do you miss the donuts after? What? It was great.
Wow.
It was
did he
wonderful.
Explain, or did you just take that moment and not want to have him embellish and just
that's right.
No,
I did. I just froze it. I said, we're freezing this. We're putting this one in the vault. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, he may come back and say, Yeah, I was sort of kidding, you know, who knows. But that's refreshing, and it shows me that probably when he goes off on his own, that, you know, Sundays, wherever he is, he may just to be grounded and just to be based and just to check in, he may find, you know, an 11 a.m. Mass at whatever town he's in, and that'll be a good thing for him. And
it'd be a great thing.
We've all done that and gone through that no matter where we've been, that we need an hour out of our week to sit there and just kind of, you know, just be with the Spirit. And I think that's vital, I think, especially these days.
Oh, it is. I mean, it's been a rough year for her, but we feel fortunate, you know, we haven't gotten sick. Nobody either. And yet so many people suffered just tremendously, lost their jobs, lost their lives. It's hurt a lot of them, but we feel, you know, count your blessings every day.
I think that's important, and I'm glad you said that. And people will say, gosh, this is terrible, isn't it? And I'll be like, you know what? We're doing okay comparatively.
Yeah.
When you bring up the other scenarios of, you know, having seen a lot of things happen, and it's like, what's our problem? The kids are bored. You know, somebody's working from home and getting on somebody's nerves, and it's like, okay, in perspective, that's nothing. You know, it's nothing compared. So, I think it's good to look at the whole picture, and that way you kind of feel better about whatever you're going through.
Well, how do you integrate your faith and some of the news that you have to report? How do you, you're supposed to be nonpartisan, non-judgmental, just give us the straight news, but how can you be?
It's hard because you have to focus on the task at hand. You have to focus on what your job is, and you have to focus on, you know, trying to be down the middle. And it's a great fight that I have, I think, in journalism and television, and is to try to make sure that both sides' stories are told, and to let the listener, viewer, or reader make up their own mind. I'm just trying to provide information. I would say one of the most difficult times I had, it's a slightly colorful story, was that I jumped on the set and was reading the news, and a story popped up about a priest that I knew at a church that I went to, mm-hmm. who had been pulled over, having left an event, and had had perhaps a glass of red too many, and was taken into custody. But I'm reading this, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this guy I know very well, and that was very difficult to read that, knowing that he probably was going to hear that I did the story, mm-hmm. and it's just like, hey, Father, I'm sorry. You know, I couldn't not read the story, and I wasn't making up a story. It actually happened, so I wasn't lying to anyone, but I was very uncomfortable. And I think you get that when you're doing a story about people you know or a situation that you're very familiar with.
Yep.
You cannot not be attached to it because you're a human being, you know, and it's hard. I would say the hardest thing, Bob, is, you know, having gone a long time before I got married and had kids, once I had kids and then I was doing stories about child abductions, mm-hmm. or things happening to children, it was really hard for me to read those stories because now I had perspective,
yep.
as a parent as to what those parents must be going through. Before, I would just read it. I wouldn't be attached to it. But now it's different because I have that perspective. So that's what's different, I think.
Yeah, that's so true. I know every time I hear a one of those tearing your heart apart kids' stories, you do. You put your child into that scene.
And yourself.
I mean, yeah.
You think, my gosh, there's something happened. I can only imagine being in that house,
right.
and waiting for a call,
right.
getting a call. It's not the call you want. It's somebody else. Somebody drives by. You think it's news. It's not. You just go, I have no idea how these poor people,
yep.
could deal with this emotionally. Mm. And, you know, before I wouldn't be attached to it. But I just think it comes with getting older, you know, going through more experiences, and And so that's the thing that I tell the young people I work with. I said, you know, I'll point some things out to them, and I don't say to them, this is the right way to do it. I will say, learn from my mistakes. I've made this mistake, and I don't want you to make that mistake. So I put it to them that way, because I've been through more things and probably have more perspective. So I just find it's true, and it's a little more disarming than me telling them what they should do. I just say, don't do what I did.
I can relate. We have three of our kids right now all got their learner's permits at the same time. Dad, can we go to the store? I need something at the store. Okay, I'll drive you. No, I want to drive. In town?
Oh my gosh.
Really?
Oh, that's insane.
Oh.
That's insane.
There's nothing as stressful as sitting in the passenger seat with your 15, 16-year-old just got a permit. We go out in the country. I drive out in the country, and then we find a road that's abandoned except for a couple of cows. And then you just say, don't hit the cow. Don't hit the cow.
Have at it. Yeah. As long as you have them in those scenarios where you're comfortable and they're comfortable and you're not, you know, running into the other lane.
Right.
You know, then it can be enjoyable. But that's a hectic one.
Yep.
And your car insurance must be. You're going to have to do many more of these shows, Bob, in order to. Holy geez, three kids with permits. That's nuts.
All at the same time. It's just.
Yeah. That is. I've never heard that. Unless you're a triplet.
AAA said the same thing. We've never heard of this.
But get your check-in.
Yeah, we don't have a rate for that.
Oh, they'll find one for you. They'll make one.
Yeah. They'll probably have special rules, how many kids can be in the car at the same time. Yeah. Oh, my.
That's a beautiful story. That's a beautiful story.
Yeah, I'll tell you. So, mm-hmm. As you look to the future,
you're
coming out of COVID. Are we gonna get better as a country?
Are you speaking from a health standpoint, or say a mental health standpoint?
I'd say a mental health standpoint. Yeah,
mental health. Does that involve politics?
I think a little bit.
I honestly can't answer that, and that's not good.
Yeah,
that's the same way. That's not me saying I can't answer that. Good. Yeah, I mean, I can't answer that, and I don't know, because as we stand now, and I'm just speaking, and it's true. I think we have a president of the United States who is the president of the Democratic Party. We also have a president of the Republican Party.
Yeah.
And with the vote, popular vote being what it is. I don't see any unification happening. So I think, you know, when we look at the midterms in 2022, we'll get a better read on where everything is. But I've never seen anything like that. I think social media is mostly to blame.
I think so.
And if people didn't have Twitter, of course, I'm speaking like I'm grandpa here.
Yeah.
And there's no turning back, but I think having seen that Twitter adjusted some people's accounts and whatnot, but I don't know that necessarily helped. I just think it helped stoke a fire, and I don't know eventually where it's all going to go. I mean, things obviously are better and have calmed down since we, you know, turned the page after Jan 6 a little bit with the Capitol riot, but even tonight, I think, the Capitol has beefed up security. And because something may happen tomorrow, just the picking stuff up on social media. But if there's any group now that wants to storm the Capitol, they're not going to get very far.
I don't think so.
That's to me, it's like pick another building. You know, don't pick that building. There's a lot of buildings in Washington that are not covered like the Capitol. So if you want to make a statement, I wouldn't go there.
Yeah, no, I would agree. Well, yeah, I've never seen anything like it either. And
that's
why we have our faith. It's God.
Yes.
I tell the kids that every day. I say that God's still in charge. If you got up in the morning and looked in the mirror and you're still alive, there's a reason.
Yeah. Yeah, I tell people, honestly, that I feel a lot better when I'm disengaged from what I do, meaning I'm not watching news, I'm not on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, any of that stuff. And I go about my day. You know, I'm working in the backyard, may run to Home Depot, come in and grab a hamburger, and it's like, I'm good.
Yep.
I don't need the negative stimulus. And people say, you know, you watch the news at night. And it's like, no. I do the news all morning. And when I go home, I'm not really going to watch news because I feel like I'm back at the office. So I need a break, and everybody needs a break. And I encourage them to take a break. If you're feeling overwhelmed by what's happening, you know, with your neighbors and this and that and pro this and anti that, it's just sometimes I just want to move to a small town in Iowa, and it has a general store, and I sit there in the front porch of the general store with my buddies, and, you know, and that's kind of the highlight of the day. And you go home and whip yourself up some mac and cheese, and it's all good. You
it's know, all
I mean,
good.
I'm a minimalist that way. I'm a minimalist.
Well, maybe after the emails you sent today, you'll get that wish.
It could be. yes. Yeah, that's very. I'm glad you brought it back to that. Thank you.
or Wairika. Wairika's in the diocese. Right. You know, it's a great little town.
Maybe Bodega. At least I can go to the beach every day. Yeah. You know, give me Bodega. Something to do. There's clam cakes and some good fish over there. So I'll take that. I love Bodega. So
I'll take Bodega.
I love it.
That's a great spot.
I love it.
Well, Walt,
yep.
So good of you to join us today. Thanks for all you do for the church, for this area, for you know, the Sacramento Diocese, for St. Vincent de Paul, but just all you do for everybody, whether they're Catholic or they're not Catholic, your efforts are greatly appreciated. You're just part of the fabric of this town.
Well, thank you. I've been here for a long time. That's it. So I think that's most of it. But I do appreciate those kind words, and it's always great to break bread with you or to talk to you on the radio or the phone or whatever, so stay in touch.
We will. God bless you and your family, man.
Okay.
Yeah.
Same to you.
Yeah.
All right. Take care, buddy.
That's Walt Gray, the anchor for News 10 here, ABC News 10 in Sacramento, and a great Catholic who there are a lot of events that he goes to and I go to, and he's very, very, very generous with his time, and people are greatly appreciative of that, and he makes no secret of his love for the Catholic Church, and he'll bring up stories of from his childhood and from here in the diocese that he just of all the people that he's so fond of. So greatly appreciate Walt taking the time to be with us today. We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at the thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
This is Lincoln Snyder, Superintendent of Catholic Schools, and you're listening to The Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
I feel a burning deep inside of me. I feel your spirit is moving around.